This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
A Royal Home, an all-women team of volunteers, friends, and co-workers is helping to make Virginia's dream of homeownership a reality.
Habitat is filling this house. Women are nailing the nails.
These women are just awesome.
I would just like to thank all of the women from the bottom of my heart.
Habitat for Humanity. Building homes, changing lives. Support the work in your community. Visit Habitat.org.
When we move in, my grandkids are going to be dancing.
Would you like to hear more of your favorite KPFT programs and less fundraising? Well, you can, but it's up to you to make it happen. You can buy back the drive and minimize on-air fundraising. You see, on the average, we receive about $20,000 in pledges per day during an on-air fund drive. If we can get listeners like you to send in your donation early, we can shorten the on-air drive by one day for every $20,000 we receive. With your pre-pledge gift, we can work toward ending the on-air drive a few hours or even a few days early. So send your gift today or make a secure contribution online at kpft.org before the on-air drive begins on May 8th. You can check on the progress of this campaign at kpft.org. Thank you for your continued and generous support of KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. We're starting a little late this evening. Tonight on our show, Queer Voices, we are going to have David Elliott calling in from Washington on his monthly report, Inside the Beltway and Beyond. Then Sally Huffer is going to join us from the Montrose Counseling Center, where she's going to be telling us about the many activities going on in the month of May, including the Hatch Prom, which is in conjunction with Older Americans Month, and the new SPRI program at the center. J.D. Doyle interviews musician Julie Lloyd, who was featured performer at the Houston International Festival this past weekend. Deborah Bell is scheduled to talk to Cheryl Swoops, out WNBA Houston Comet player, about the opening of her new club. And other things, including This Way Out, community comment, and we're going to introduce the crew now. This is Jack Valinsky,
J.D. Doyle,
Jennifer Renee,
Grant Chapman,
Deborah Bell,
and Glenn Holt.
And with all that going on, I believe we have David Elliott. Good evening, David. How are things going in Washington?
Well, good evening to you, Jack, and good evening to you, Glenn. How are you all tonight, and how is everybody out there in Queer Voices land?
Well, it's just a great day here. We had a pretty busy weekend this past week, a number of things going on, including the big HRC gala, which raised a lot of money that we're sending up your way to Washington.
Well, we appreciate that, Jack, and we need all the help we can get, and we're going to send it right back.
Okay.
Jack, I've got a couple of different things that I'd like to talk to you tonight about, if I may.
Okay.
First on my plate, you know, we've seen the TV ads, natives with the friendly smiles engaging Americans to, quote, come back to Jamaica. Websites implore us to visit our, quote, home away from home. The pictures are engaging, tantalizing even. The landscape, pristine. But in Jamaica and throughout the Caribbean, an ugly truth is beginning to emerge. And that truth, Jack, is what I want to talk about tonight. For even as the LGBT community spends millions and millions of dollars each year on vacation to visit the Caribbean, the level of gay bashing and both official and unofficial discrimination against the LGBT community appears to be on the rise. A recent article in Time magazine, for example, called Jamaica, quote, the most homophobic place on earth, close quote. It pointed out that recently two of the island's leading gay rights advocates, Brian Williamson and Steve Harvey, had been ruthlessly slain. In 2004, a father who learned that his son was gay went to his school and urged the other students to lynch his son. As prominent gay blogger Wayne Besson noted, Now that's family values. And in Montego Bay, a mob stabbed and stoned to death a gay man. And in Kingston earlier this year, a gay man drowned after a crowd chased him off of a dock. Rebecca Schlieffer of the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch organization said, quote, Jamaica is the worst any of us has ever seen, close quote. But Jack, it's not just Jamaica that the LGBT community is going to and spending their vacation dollars and experiencing this type of violence. Violence is spreading to other parts of the region. In St. Martin, two journalists with CBS News were bashed by thugs wielding tire irons. The victims were Richard Jefferson, age 51, and Ryan Smith, age 25. They were both airlifted to Miami for treatment, and one of them is being treated, as we speak, for brain damage. And meanwhile, in the Bahamas, the movie Brokeback Mountain, that groundbreaking, trend-setting movie, has been banned. Nassau boasts of its pristine waters and prime beaches, but openness and respect for diversity apparently are not among its attributes and values. And Wayne Besson, the prominent gay blogger I quoted earlier, suggests that perhaps it is time for the LGBT community to reconsider the millions of dollars it is spending annually on vacations to these so-called paradises. He says, and I quote, Unlike other homophobic hotbeds in the Middle East, our community can exercise considerable leverage over these human rights abusers. While few Americans are going to spend a holiday in Jeddah or Tehran, we are frequently visiting the Caribbean. Many of our allies would gladly vacation elsewhere if they were aware that their gay friends and family members were being brutally attacked. He continues, It is time for Americans to reassess their relationship with islands such as Jamaica, San Martin, and the Bahamas. Either they welcome all of us or none of us. But these so-called paradises can no longer be playgrounds for heterosexuals and hunting grounds for homosexuals. And Jack, you know, that's the first report that I have to bring you tonight. And I think that maybe y'all have had an issue regarding Jamaica back in Houston that you know
yes.
a little bit about.
Well, actually, I mean, the International Festival, which is the biggest festival that happens here every year, that was the country they were spotlighting this past 2 weeks.
And tell me a little bit about that. Were these types of issues brought up there? Was there diversity on stage? What was going on there?
Well, I was only there briefly. It's a big festival. There are a number of different stages that goes on at the festival. Were those issues brought up? No, it's a festival. They don't bring up those type of issues.
Right, right. Well, I do have something to bring you, Jack, out of Washington, D.C., on a bit of a brighter note, if I may.
Sure.
Last Saturday night, we had the annual White House Correspondent Dinner.
You know, it's really interesting because I was listening to the CBC earlier, and Stephen Colbert apparently did a pretty interesting talk at that dinner.
That exactly is what I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, it's bizarre because this thing has been rolling on CNN all weekend, and they were showing the person playing Bush with Bush next to him, but nobody else seemed to mention this except the CBC.
Well, yeah, it hasn't gotten that much attention in the mainstream media in the United States, but, you know, we're going to do something about that right now, okay?
Well, let's go ahead.
Okay, let's roll. You know, Stephen Colbert of the Colbert Report on Comedy Central's, fake talk show host setup was there, and Colbert was being his talk show character, and it's important for the listeners to understand that when he's inside his character, he's pretending to be a person who's ostensibly supports the president really strongly.
Yes, and it's sort of very much a takeoff of Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And under this guise, Colbert urged the president to ignore his low approval ratings,
right,
saying they were based on reality. And, quote, reality has a well-known liberal bias. He also went on to attack those in the press who claim that the shakeup at the White House was merely rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And I quote, this administration is soaring, not sinking. If anything, they are rearranging the deck chairs on the Hindenburg. Colbert went on to tell Bush, who was sitting in the audience, by the way, we'll get to that in a minute, he went on to tell Bush that he could end the problem of protests by retired generals by simply refusing to allow them to retire. And then turning to the war in Iraq, or should I say the war on Iraq, he declared, quote, I believe that the government that governs best is a government that governs least. And by these standards, we have set up a fabulous government in Iraq. Close quote. Now, Colbert also made biting cracks about missing weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. We've only had one mass destruction so far that I know of. Photo ops on aircraft carriers. He joked about hurricane disasters, melting glaciers, and Vice President Cheney shooting people in the face. He advised the crowd, quote, if anybody needs anything at their table, speak slowly and clearly into your table numbers, and somebody from the National Security Agency will be right over with a cocktail, close quote. And, you know, observing that Bush does stick to his principles, he said, quote, when the president decides something on Monday, he still believes it on Wednesday, no matter what happened Tuesday, close quote. Now, Colbert also lampooned the press a little bit. He complained that he was, quote, surrounded by the liberal media who are destroying this country, except for Fox News. Fox News believes in presenting both sides of the story, the president's side and the vice president's side. And in another slap at Fox News, he said, quote, I give people the truth, unfiltered by rational argument. I call it the no-fact zone, close quote. He also reflected on the alleged good old days for the president when the media was still swallowing the weapons of mass destruction story. Addressing the reporters in the audience, and oh God, Jack, this is good, he said, quote, let's review the rules. Here's how it works. The president makes decisions. He's the decider. The press secretary announces those decisions, and you people of the press type those decisions down. Make, announce, type. Put them through a spell check and go home. Get to know your family again. Make love to your wife. Write that novel you've got kicking around in your head. You know, the one about the intrepid Washington reporter with the courage to stand up to the administration. You know, fiction. He went on to claim that the Secret Service name for Bush's new press secretary is, quote, Snow Job. Now, Jack, I have to tell you, as Colbert walked away from the podium, you know, when it was all over, the president and the first lady gave him quick nods. They weren't really smiling. The president shook his hand and tapped his elbow and left immediately. Those seated near Bush said that the president quickly turned from an amused guest to an obviously offended target as Colbert's comments brought up his low approval ratings and problems in Iraq. Now, to provide balance, and you know we want to provide balance, President Bush also had a couple of good lines when he spoke. For example, he joked that he survived the recent White House shakeup. He also said that Vice President Cheney is a good man with a good heart. Well, he's a good man. And he said he loves America. He said he loves America because it's full of Americans. And he said that it is time for all Americans to come together again, Democrats and Republicans and John McCain. And, Jack, I'll close tonight.
Well, this is really interesting. I mean, it was John Stewart who went on Crossfire and basically sort of opened up that rat's nest about how bad that was for America. And now we have Steve Colbert coming to the correspondents' dinner, basically the only person with enough nerve to say stuff like that. And he's a comical character just like John Stewart is. And isn't that interesting that, and in fact, I watch John Stewart's show every night. And I get more out of the news than I would probably on a lot of other programs other than NPR or Pacifica. And it's really interesting. Now, where did you actually get to see? Did you go to the dinner?
No, Jack, actually, I was off Saturday night, actually having a life and, I might say doing something with an important, significant other of mine.
Well, good.
And I was not at the dinner. I have to say that I'm probably not enough of a somebody to have scored tickets to that
right.
thing. Actually, if I had been, I would have taken my significant other to that, although we probably, in all honesty, would have left early.
Yes. Well, and it's really interesting. I mean, they use the gay issue to stir up their right wing or their base, and I guess they're realizing now that they probably made a mistake with to stir up the immigration. They're not really wanting to solve this problem. If they really wanted to work on the problem, they would like do some studying and try to make it work. And I guess this is sort of seems to be backfiring on them, and it may get a lot of people sort of thinking about registering to vote that never did that before, or even going out and vote and probably voting against the Republicans.
Well, Jack, the Republicans still are doing a masterful job of micro-targeting. And I'll give you a prime example of what I mean by that. Just before I called into the show tonight, I was checking my email, and I was reading up about the Log Cabin Republican Convention that happened this last weekend. For those listeners who might not know, the Log Cabin Republicans are basically a group of gay and lesbian Republicans and also other Republicans who might not be gay or lesbian, but they are supportive of gay or lesbian rights. And the folks at the Log Cabin Convention this year, they were honoring an openly gay congressman from Arizona who's retiring, Congressman Colby.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed videos from Vice President Cheney commending Colby, and from Speaker Dennis Hastert commending Colby. And Jack, this is micro-targeting, because they were doing this to the Log Cabin Republicans who have lots of money to give, but at the same time, the religious right faction of the Republican Party had absolutely no idea. Hopefully some of the religious right folks are listening to your program tonight, or monitoring it, so to speak, and they will know that Dick Cheney and Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, have come out as pro-gay.
Well,
Jack, I have to, but before my time runs out, I have to read you, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
One of the great Bushisms, uttered tongue-in-cheek from the correspondent dinner Saturday night. This is George W. Bush himself talking, making fun of his propensity to commit an occasional malapropism from time to time. Quote, "My friends, our purple mountains with ramparts red glare, white with foam and justice for all, fruity plains gallantly streaming from sea to shining sea, with a shining city on a shining hill, above a shining prairie, and maybe some shiny trees and a few shrubs, I see a shiny America."
Okay. Spoken like a true child.
Okay. We don't have the hidden microphones on our table. We actually have them out front, so the NSA is definitely listening in. David, just in case they forgot, what do you do for your day job?
Well, little Jack, for my day job, I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find us on the web at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. And you can look at our blog at deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com. Again, that's deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com.
And I certainly appreciate all the important work you do, both during the day and in your off time.
Well, thank you very much, Jack, and hello, Glenn, and hello, Deb, if you're out there somewhere, and hello, Queer Voices.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Kathy Sanchez.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 29th, 2006. Philip Braun of Germany and Rosana Flamer Caldera of Sri Lanka were elected co-secretaries general of the International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA, during the group's 23rd World Conference in Geneva earlier this month. The organization also created a transgender secretariat and elected Sweden's National Federation for Sexual Equality, or RFSL, as women's secretariat. ILGA was founded in 1978 and has more than 500 national and local LGBT member organizations from about 90 countries. The global group holds world conferences every 2 years. The 2008 meeting will be held in Quebec, and the 2010 gathering is planned for Moscow. A public demonstration was also held in Geneva during ILGA's April conference, protesting Moscow Mayor Yuri Luzhkov's promise to ban the city's first ever pride parade, scheduled to take place on May 27th.
Gay and lesbian activists in the Latvian capital of Riga say they'll stage a second annual pride parade despite their harrowing experiences at a first ever march in 2005. Last year's parade by about 150 marchers was completely overwhelmed by some 1,000 protesters shouting obscenities, throwing bottles and rotten eggs, blocking the streets and forcing the procession to be rerouted. In the end, police had to form a human chain around the marchers to keep them safe. A new LGBT group called Mosaic is organizing this year's march, planned for July 22nd, and has promised better planning and public education prior to the event. This year, a wider and more professional circle of people are involved, a Mosaic spokesperson said. LGBT marches and demonstrations have been hindered, banned, or faced violent protests in other European cities in recent years, including Belgrade, Chisinau, Bucharest, Zagreb, Warsaw, Krakow, and Poznan. The European Court of Human Rights has previously said that countries have a duty to protect those exercising their rights of peaceful assembly from violent attacks by counter-demonstrators.
But the Pride Committee in the Canadian capital of Ottawa is effectively bankrupt, the Ottawa Citizen newspaper has reported. Ottawa Gatineau Pride is $187,000 in debt and needs an infusion of $25,000 from the city government to stay afloat and stage this year's parade and festival, the committee says. After poor returns in past years, the festival's traditional supporters have been slow to sign on for this year's events. If we don't have a festival this year, then there's no guarantee we can pay back the creditors, committee member Tamara Stamis told the paper. Ironically, about $66,000 of the existing debt is owed to the city. Another $100,000 is owed to local businesses, some of which have agreed to accept repayment at 25 cents on the dollar.
Gays and lesbians in Israel took part for the first time this week in the country's Holocaust Remembrance Day, which honors the millions killed by the Nazis. Two representatives of the LGBT group Jerusalem Open House laid a wreath representing the queer community at the foot of the Warsaw Ghetto Rebellion Monument in the Holocaust Center. An estimated 5,000 to 15,000 gay people arrested as sexual deviants were forced to wear pink triangles and sent to concentration camps and gas chambers during the Nazi regime. Amir Sumakai Fink, one of the Jerusalem Open House members laying the symbolic wreath, said, "As a gay man and as the son of a family of Holocaust survivors, I felt that I was closing a circle by participating in the ceremony as a representative of the GLBT community."
British nationals living in Hong Kong won't be able to legally marry their same-gender partners there. Under the civil partnerships legislation that took effect in the UK in December, British gays and lesbians can legally marry their partners at consulates in other countries, but only if the host nation has no objections. 14 countries, including Venezuela, Turkmenistan, Colombia, Belarus, the U.S., Japan, and Vietnam, have given the okay. But the Hong Kong government has informed us that it does not consider it appropriate to agree to the registration of civil partnerships of same-sex couples at the British Consulate General Hong Kong at present, the consulate announced on its website last week. While homosexuality was decriminalized there in 1991, a Home Affairs Bureau spokesperson said the Hong Kong government withheld approval for the civil partnership registrations because, perhaps ironically, it's still considering how to address anti-lesbigay discrimination.
Two-thirds of lesbian and a third of gay male couples in the U.S. plan to add children to their families over the next 3 years, according to a survey released this week. Those numbers have increased dramatically over the past 4 years, according to Jeffrey Garber, president of Opuscom Group, which conducted the annual survey of gays and lesbians with Syracuse University's S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications. In 2002, just 15% of lesbians and 5% of gay men told the researchers they wanted children. People are saying they're more comfortable with their sexuality, Garber said, and that they have a right to a life partner, and along with that, if they have a loving home, why not a child? The proportion of gay people surveyed who reported being out also increased from 93% to 97%. Of those responding this year, 21% of lesbians and 5% of gay men said they already have a child living at home. About 7,500 people completed the annual hour-long online survey, which was first conducted in 2001.
Two sets of parents in Massachusetts have sued the town of Lexington and its public school system because a teacher read a gay-positive fairy tale to their children's class of mostly seven-year-olds. King and King tells the story of a crown prince who rejects a bevy of beautiful princesses, rebuffing each suitor until falling in love with the prince. The two princes marry, sealing the union with a kiss, and live happily ever after. The lawsuit charges that the school system should have asked for parental consent before the story was read to the class. The complaint said the school has begun a process of intentionally indoctrinating very young children to affirm the notion that homosexuality is right and normal, in direct denigration of the plaintiff's deeply held religious faith. It also charges that Lexington broke a 1996 Massachusetts law requiring that parents be given prior notification of sex education lessons. Lexington Superintendent of Schools Paul Ash said the school was under no legal obligation to inform parents that the story would be read as part of a lesson about different types of weddings, insisting that including the story did not constitute sex education. This school district is committed to a welcoming environment for all kids, he said. We embrace the diverse nature of the community.
In 2005, GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, surveyed more than 1,700 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students between the ages of 13 and 20 from all 50 U.S. states and the District of Columbia. The results were released this week. Almost two-thirds of the respondents said they were verbally harassed because of their sexual orientation, and more than a third suffered physical harassment. About half reported being harassed for their gender identity, and 25% experienced anti-transgender physical harassment. The study also reported that only 16.5% of the students said that a school staff member intervened when they heard anti-gay insults. About 18% said they had actually heard staff making homophobic comments. 28% of the students surveyed had skipped school in the previous month because they felt unsafe. Queer students were more than five times more likely to cut class than the general student body, which not surprisingly resulted in their getting poorer grades. Of most concern to equality advocates is that there's been little positive change in the survey results since it was last conducted in 2003. Fewer students in 2005 could identify school staff that they felt comfortable speaking with about LGBT issues, and there's been no improvement in resources for them since 2003, the study found.
GLSEN's report also argues that generic anti-bullying laws that don't explicitly prohibit anti-gay harassment in schools are tantamount to no bullying laws at all, but that students from states with specific anti-bias laws often report better school experiences. While anti-discrimination laws helped students, certain policies hurt them, GLSEN reports. Students in schools with abstinence-only sex education, for example, were more likely to experience anti-gay discrimination, according to the survey. It's kind of scary that something considered education is actually contributing to isolation and fear and harassment, says Judy Hoff, the Safe Schools coordinator at Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. The abstinence program says you don't have sex until you're married, she said. The side comment to gay and lesbian kids is, oh, by the way, you never get to have sex. You're a second-class citizen.
And finally, GLSEN's 10th annual National Day of Silence was held this week, with an estimated 500,000 queer and queer-supportive students at 4,000 schools across the U.S. participating. Students don't speak during the day and wear tags or hand out leaflets to explain how they feel muzzled and can't truly be themselves on campus. The event is also held to spotlight the pervasive problem of anti-queer bullying and harassment in schools. Dozens of Breaking the Silence rallies and events were also held during the week in communities across the country.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 29, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Kathy Sanchez.
This is Queer Voices.
Myself and everything that I could learn. But don't get me wrong, that's not to say that I didn't freak. But after some time and after some tears, it's time for me to plant my feet. There is no safety net, there never was. You don't look down, you just live. And once you're knowing, you keep on going. You don't stop just because you're positive. So I called up my folks and we talked for a bit about everyday stuff. I couldn't find the words, couldn't make a sound until they tried to say goodbye. And I just blurted it out and I burst into tears as soon as I said that word. They cried a few and then spoke words of love like I had never heard. I think that makes me so damn lucky, and of that I'm positive. I got news for you, my little friend, growing quietly inside. You can't touch the part that's really me, so don't you even try. News for you, my little friend, growing patiently inside. You can't touch the part that's really me, so don't you even, don't you even, I said, don't you even try. Now I love my life, I'm still friends with my ex-wife, and I chose to confess. So don't call me brave, don't weep for me, 'cause I am truly blessed. There is no safety net, you know there never was. You don't look down, you just live. And once you're knowing, you keep on.
because you're positive.
And that song is called Positive. This is J.D. Doyle. That song is about being positive, about being positive. And that is a world premiere. That was by an artist named Ted Fox. And I'm very pleased he won it. That aired first on Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
Hello, I'm Greg Chapman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, and I am happy to have with me today Sally Heffer from the Montrose Counseling Center. She is a relations specialist.
Community project specialist.
I was going to say, if you're a relations specialist, what do I need to come down there? Yeah.
And no, I'm not one of the therapists here. I'm not into the relationship counseling.
That's a whole other, yeah, another segment, isn't it?
Well, and I understand there's a lot going on in the month of May.
There is, and I'm so glad to be here for the month of May because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so we wanted to come down, talk to you about the importance of mental health as it relates to entire wellness, because so many times we think about wellness and we don't think about the mental health component. In fact, so many times we stigmatize the mental health component.
We can all use better mental health, let's face it.
Isn't that the truth? So I wanted to talk about a lot of times when I come on KPFT, we talk about specific programs, and I hope that, you know, we'll have a chance to talk about those. But one of the things that we don't really get to talk about much are just the real core counseling programs that we have at Montrose Counseling Center.
This is Jennifer. What are some of the programs you have?
Well, our counseling programs are divided into four different areas. One is the life counseling program, and that's your basic core counseling program. Anything from depression, relationship issues, coming out. One of the wonderful things about Montrose Counseling Center is that you can come and you can talk about issues that you're going through, and the whole GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender thing can be a backdrop. And so if you're dealing with coming out issues, we can certainly talk with you about that, but it's not always the reason why people come to Montrose Counseling Center. We provide an environment where you can come and talk about your issues, and you can use whatever pronouns you need to, relating to, you know, your relationships and that sort of thing. So, you know, you don't have to educate your therapist about what it's like to be gay before you actually seek treatment.
Are you saying GLBT people are like other people and they have other problems?
Exactly.
Other issues?
Exactly. So, you know, we can deal with self-esteem building, as I said, depression, substance abuse. We have in among the four different counseling programs, we also have chemical dependency counseling and treatment. So it's an outpatient program. We also have HIV counseling. So for people who are either recently diagnosed or who have been diagnosed and dealing with HIV disease for a long time, you know, there's certain stressors that they're facing. And so we have a special counseling department specifically for people who are dealing with HIV disease.
Well, I know that we're dealing with all GLBT people, but what if somebody's listening out there that just needs some help that may or may not fit right into that category? Can they still come down?
Well, that would, yes, of course. Like I said, our life counseling program mm-hmm. is for general life issues, so it doesn't have to be chemical dependency, and it doesn't have to be HIV counseling. We also have counseling in our anti-violence program, and we come down here and we promote that a lot, because you don't leave the house thinking that you're going to be the victim of a hate crime, and you don't leave the house thinking that, you know, you're going to be the victim of a sexual assault. Those are the kinds of things that, or, you know, people are oftentimes dealing with adults who have been sexually assaulted as children. And so these people are dealing with these issues, you know, all throughout their lives. And so we have a specific program, the anti-violence program, that can help people with those issues, as well as domestic violence. It happens in the GLBT community as well.
I was going to ask you, is domestic violence included in that?
It is included in that. In fact, through the anti-violence program, you can get counseling, but you can also meet with a case manager and put together a safety plan. Because if you're in a harmful relationship, and we oftentimes talk about a domestic violence situation does not have to be physically violent. It can be abusive in terms of emotional abuse, financial abuse, isolating from one's family and friends. That's one way to do it. Keeping track of, you know, finding out, you know, who have you talked to today, looking up somebody's email, checking somebody's cell phone to see who's calling, and just, you know, that kind of thing. Are ways to maintain power and control over another person.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, there's so much abuse that goes, that's out there, that's not even physical, that that emotional, is verbal abuse, something as simple as that, putting someone down, well, you're crazy, you're stupid, you're worthless. All of those things will take the life right out of a person if it's repeated enough times. Also, exercising control over that person.
Well, and also, we're dealing with some issues in the GLBT and HIV-positive communities that are a little bit different than in, you know, the regular population. Domestic violence happens in our community about the same rate as it happens among straight couples. That is, about one in every four couples has some kind of power and control imbalance. And so we're dealing with a lot of those issues. And in the gay community, one of the things that we find happening is the threat to out somebody. You can threaten to out somebody to parents, family, friends, employers, that sort of thing. That's something that the straight community doesn't have to deal with in terms of power and control, as well as HIV status. So these are areas where people do exert power and control. The other thing is that when somebody's first coming out and in one of their first relationships, they may, you know, get told by their partner, well, this is what a gay relationship is like. This is what you have to expect. Or, look, your family and friends don't love you anymore because you're gay. I'm the only one that loves you. And so there are ways that people manipulate based on that GLBT.
I would think there would be some pressure, perhaps, to isolate, especially if you're sort of new to the community. And that would be an easy way for someone to exert power over you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially if somebody's not out to their family.
Right.
So, most definitely. So, you know, as I say, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and so we do want to point out that we do have many services for mental health counseling. We do couples counseling, group counseling, individual counseling at the counseling center.
I was just going to say, don't you have a special program for older
Americans? We do. Thanks for asking. May is also Older Americans Month, and so I was hoping that we would get a chance to talk about the SPRY program. SPRY stands for Seniors Preparing for Their Rainbow Years, and it's a program that we recently started. It is for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender persons who are age 60 and above, and it's a joint program that we have with Legacy Community Health Services. What it is that we are reaching out to older GLBT persons, and at first just doing a needs assessment, saying, hey, what are your needs? Oftentimes, you know, we've heard it. We did a survey a few years ago at Montrose Counseling Center, and we asked a number of, say, nursing homes, you know, what is your experience with GLBT populations? And we were told resoundingly that we don't have people who are GLBT in our, you know, assisted living facilities. And so
were saying, they didn't know of any.
Well, we asked them to explain further, and they said, well, you know, at this age, they're not having sex. Which doesn't take into account that, you know, we're talking about, you know, the core of an individual, whether they're having sex or not. And we all know that people over the age of 60 are still having sex. So, you know, they didn't take into account that, you know, being GLBT is not just a sexual issue. It's an affectional issue, too. And so...
Well, you know, that's interesting, because there's this idea that that, you know, some people have, that if they could make people who are gay stop having sex, that somehow makes them not gay. They still are gay. They're just not having sex.
Right.
If you succeed. I mean, you know, you don't take away that that core of who you are, like you said. So.
Right. So, you know, one of our watchwords is you don't have to go back into the closet just because you're getting older. A lot of times seniors grew up in an era where, you know, mental health services were far more stigmatized than they are now, and they still are stigmatized. But also being gay, nobody talked about it. And it comes from an era where people didn't talk about their problems a lot, too. And so we're trying to reach out and say, hey, you know, if you need help, we can provide counseling, but not just counseling. We can provide case management services. So that means that if you're out there and you need to file for disability and you don't know how, you just know that day-to-day living is getting increasingly difficult and you're not sure how to file for disability, our case managers can walk you right through that whole process. Mm-hmm. If you need assistance filing for utility assistance, mm-hmm. and you don't know where to go because you're finding it hard, you know, with your Social Security check to make ends meet and pay your utilities, we can help you find, you know, how you go about doing that.
Before we move on, how do we get in touch with you?
Thank you for your information. Yes, Montrose Counseling Center. The phone number is 713-529-0037, and you can find us on the internet at www.montrosecounselingcenter.org.
For those people that didn't have a pencil when you started, do it again.
I will. Thank you. It's the phone number for Montrose Counseling Center is 713-529-0037, and our web address is www.montrosecounselingcenter.org.
Now, more about the was it SPRI?
SPRI program.
SPRI program. That sounds so fascinating. Now, how do you reach these people? Other than us talking about it tonight, how is your outreach to those people?
We have 4 outreach workers that we've hired at Montrose Counseling Center, and Legacy Community Health Services has hired 4. And I got to tell you that since we've hired these 4 people, every time I am out in the community, I see them out there with flyers. They're talking to people. They're going to different meetings. They're definitely out there and tabling a number of events. So you can, chances are, you know, if you're active in the community, you'll run into somebody. But you can also check our website and find out some more information about the SPRI program there.
I was going to say that, you know, if you're not around, if you haven't seen one of them and you haven't seen a flyer, then they need to call you or go on the internet and email you.
Right. Now, what I wanted to talk about with the SPRI program is that this comes from a 3-year grant that we got from the federal government, and it's $1.2 million over the course of 3 years. When people come to the counseling center for SPRI services, we're going to do a needs assessment and an intake at the very beginning. Now, what that means is when you come to the counseling center, we're going to do an assessment. We're going to find out if you have insurance or Medicare or Medicaid, that sort of thing. And if you do have Medicare or Medicaid or an insurance plan, we do bill them first. And then anything in excess of that, if you have a deductible that you have to meet, or if you have a copay that you have to pay in conjunction with your insurance, Medicare or Medicaid, then we'll go ahead and pay for that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, but we do make sure, because the resources are so limited, that we use up those resources first. That's part of the grant that we received, is to make sure, you know, that we do check to see what other people, you know, if people have other resources to be able to use that. And that way we can extend the services.
Great. Oh, that's so wonderful. What other programs? Now, we talked about this, the SPRI.
Well,
was there anything else that you wanted to... We don't want to miss anything now.
Right. Before I wrap up, I just wanted to point out one of the reasons why this is so important is because this year, 2006, is the first year that the baby boom generation, people who were born in 1946, are hitting the age of 60. So, you know, that population is going to skyrocket in the coming years. And I know that...
And they're spry.
And when I get to that age, boy, I want to have this program working, you know, up and moving and very successful. So, well, coming up in June, I wanted to mention that we have the Hatch Prom coming up. In the news segment before the music, they were talking about what GLBT youth face in their schools and how a lot of them don't go to classes and how their grades drop and that sort of thing because of fear of being, you know, ostracized and bullied and that sort of thing. And so one of the things that we do every year with Hatch, that's our gay youth program, it's for gay youth between the ages of 13 and 20. I say gay youth, and it's gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. We hold a prom for them every year, and it's coming up on June 9th, which is a Friday night. It's held at the Magnolia Ballroom, and we do open it up to the public because not everybody was able to go to their prom, and not everybody was able to go to their prom dressed the way they want to dress.
I know of a few people like that.
And a lot of people weren't able to go to their prom with the date that they wanted to go with. So,
if someone's interested in going to that prom, do they need to contact you, or how does that work?
They can buy tickets at the door. It's $25 for adults to get in, and we encourage adults to come to the prom because every time an adult walks through that door, it is one more role model for the youth. Now, if there are youth out there listening, any youth, GLBT, under the age of 21, that is between 13 and 20, they can show up and they get in free. There's going to be food, music, there'll be photographers there, just like a regular prom. Every year we have a really wonderful time.
So to contact you at the, not you specifically, but contact the counseling center?
Well, I can give you the phone number. Hatch has a different phone number.
Oh, they do?
They do.
I thought they did.
It's 713-529-3590.
And this is for Hatch. This is for the youthful ones of us.
Right,
for
exactly.
For the prom. Okay.
And I'm curious, what kind of theme does the prom have, or does it have one?
You know, every year they come up with a new one, and there's a committee of the youth that determines what that theme is. And I could tell you what they were kind of leaning towards, except for it usually changes a few times before we actually get to the prom.
Oh, well, there's still some, but we'll have you back on and let you give us that little secret later.
That'd be great. Again, it's going to be on June 9th. It's a Friday night at the historic Magnolia Ballroom.
Now, where's Magnolia Ballroom?
That's downtown?
Mm-hmm. Downtown, just on the north side of downtown. I always take, from the Montrose area, I just take Montrose all the way up to Washington and turn right. And then Washington, turns into either Franklin or Preston.
And what was the telephone number for Hatch?
713-529-3590.
We have been talking to Sally Heffer with the Montrose Counseling Center Community, and she has been talking about Mental Health Awareness Month and also the SPRI program, which is a program targeted towards older GLBT folks, and also the HATCH program, which is sort of the opposite side of the spectrum, which is targeted to 13 to 21.
When you hit your 21st birthday, then you age out of HATCH.
Then you age out of HATCH.
Right. We do have a program for youth who, as they get ready to age out for them, and it's the HATCH Youth Leadership Program. And with that, we're trying to target the youth with other community organizations and trying to get them integrated into those organizations. And we always hear people say, where are the youth today? Where are the kids today? You know, who's going to do this after I'm finished? You know, who's going to come in and be the activists after us? Well, they're there and they want to do it. Sometimes they just need a helping hand. Because I don't know if, you know, the first time I ever sat on a board, I didn't know anything about Robert's Rules of Order or anything like that. And it was a little daunting. So, you know, the Hatch Youth Leadership Program, as somebody's getting ready to approach their 21st birthday, we try to pair them up with one of the organizations in town. And they can have, an internship, or in some cases, they have a non-voting board position where they can actually learn, you know, how the different organizations work.
But you have all of it together then, don't you?
Well, I don't know about that.
What have we missed?
Well, in 2 days, we're having our The Secrets Out Luncheon for Montrose Counseling Center. It's our annual fundraiser, and we are holding it over at the Renaissance Hotel at Greenway Plaza. If anybody would like to support us, it's a lunch that we're having. There's no cost to come to the lunch. We just want to share our mission and share the passion that we have for what we're doing. And if anybody is interested in coming to that, hopefully we've sent out enough emails and notified enough people. But if you are a supporter of Montrose Counseling Center and you'd like to attend our luncheon, you can give me a call at the phone number at the Counseling Center, 713-529-0037. And my extension is 32. 724.
So the luncheon's on Wednesday?
On Wednesday of this week.
And
it's from noon to 1 o'clock.
Noon to 1 o'clock.
Thank you again for coming today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
But it's more than that. few plays. I took a few turns to who knows where. Got to scale a few walls to learn I care. Now I know I care. And it's been so long. Now we get to smile like we belong. Like we're safe inside when nothing's wrong. Like we're in
first song you hear was an unreleased track by Boy George and a drag artist named Miss Guy, whose former band is Miss Guy and the Toilet Boys, more of a punk group, and that was kind of a more Boy George's style. Again, an unreleased track here on Queer Voices. But I followed that with, of course, Farron, with the title track from her latest CD, her first one in 9 years, called Turning Into Beautiful.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt. And the entire Queer Voices crew.
And this is J.D. Doyle. Jennifer Renee is in the studio helping me because we are very pleased to have a live studio guest, Julie Lloyd. Julie, welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you for having me.
Julie was in town this past weekend for the Houston International Festival. She was one of the featured performers, and it was stellar entertainment. I went both days this past weekend. I saw Natalia Zuckerman, Erika Lukit, Martine Locke. Oh, gee, there's so many.
Yeah, there were a lot. Petri Spike was there last weekend.
Mm-hmm. Now, Peace in the Porch is a CD. It's also a project, though, kind of a benefit CD. Can you quickly tell me about that project and how you got involved with that?
Well, what I know about it is I think it's they've done two of them so far. The last one was going towards the American Cancer Society, I believe. And this year they decided to do a second compilation, and this one's going towards the domestic violence and sexual abuse and that sort of thing, I think. And it's specifically over the International Festival. Everything was going towards Houston-based shelters.
Right, the Houston Women's Center got all the proceeds from the CD sales of Peace from the Porch CD,
right,
that was sold this weekend. And this was like the CD release party for that CD. We've had Christy on in the past recently, so we've been really talking it up. One of your songs, of course, is on that CD, and that's the one I'd like you to do first.
Okay, well, let's get to it.
It's called The Waiting Room.
Thank you. million women waiting for someone to ask us to dance. And we are crossing our fingers, we are flowers, wanting flowers in a garden at the edge of the room. We are fragile and clumsy, we are brilliant and thundering. Taking notes, we are making plans, we are making do, and scoring the quizzes of our fashion IQ. We are nervous and tender, we are ready to surrender. A hand waiting for the lovers we never had. It is Sunday. It is raining. For a movie they're filming downtown. And we are surfing past commercials into Lifetime, prime time specials, and keeping time by the TV guide. For someone to ask us to play. We are careful, we are hopeful, waiting for someone to give us a chance, waiting for the lovers we never had.
Julie knows. Thanks. That's my favorite of her songs, so of course that was a must for tonight's show. Is that one of your more political songs?
I think that probably the way I tend to be political, it probably is, but it's also kind of one of those veiled songs where if you don't want to see what it's about, you can just listen to it and be like, oh, it's just about single women. How interesting. But I think if people actually listen to it with a queer perspective, they're going to think that it's something entirely different.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, well. Well, I'm not really surprised.
That's from your album by the same name, The Waiting Room. Tell me about the new album.
The new album. Well, it's been out for a little while now. I recorded it in New York City with a friend of mine. We recorded it in literally like an 8x10 apartment. We recorded it underneath his loft bed, which is really surprising because it's got a really huge sound.
Oh, it sounds very good.
Yeah, right? I could not be more pleased with it. But it's just kind of funny to me, even when I think back to the experience of doing it, how sort of ironic it is that this huge sound came out of such a small place.
And this is your third album?
Yes, this is my third album.
Since what, 2000? Or?
I think my first album came out in 2000. The next one came out the next year, 2001. And then this one, I guess, came out last year.
2004, I think it says on the CD.
Yeah, but I actually released it last, uh-huh. It was like the very end of 2004, beginning of 2005.
How do you think your music's evolved since your first album?
I think that I've developed a sense of importance of melody that has kind of made my songwriting come together a lot more lately. And also, I think I've just gotten higher energy and better at performing, and that comes across through that, too.
Well, you do a lot of performing. You tour, like, constantly.
Yeah, like, basically constantly.
How many dates a year?
Right now, I'm averaging about 170.
All over the country, right.
Yeah, nationally.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a good section of time last year? Yeah, it was last year that I was actually just living out of my car for 8 months and just toured basically nonstop, playing a show almost every night.
And where are you based out of, if you can even use that?
Do you have a home?
I do now, which is really nice. I actually live in Chicago now. I moved there in December. But there was a good long stint where my car was my home. And
so you moved into a house concert, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I sort of accidentally ended up in a house that has house concerts a lot. So
I'm teasing her about that because I've been to a house concert where she now lives, and I've met her girlfriend before I knew her in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how small this queer world is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there some overall message you hope your music gets across?
I think for me, again, it kind of comes back to my idea of political. I think my idea of being political is presenting queer relationships in a way that makes them come across as seeming totally normal and totally understandable, which is kind of in kind of a subtle way, but it's sort of, I feel like, a kind of a gentle way of introducing alternative, quote-unquote, alternative lifestyles as something that isn't...
More matter of fact.
What's that?
In a more matter of fact way.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it is what it is, and it's totally... conceptually understandable for people. Like, they can relate to it on a very emotional level without realizing that they're making a political statement by doing so.
So is your next album going to be more political, or are you there yet?
Well, actually, my next CD is actually going to be a live CD. So it's a lot of stuff that I've already released, as well as a few other songs. So actually, lately with my songwriting, I've gotten to be a lot more focused on telling other people's stories and not just my own, and those can be political in a couple of different ways. Like, recently I wrote a song about a mother who gives up her child, and just sort of that kind of feeling of being a single mother and kind of having to deal with that. And I'm always looking for more political songs to write. I'm actually working on one right now, but I feel bad about it because it makes me sound like I'm anti-heteros, and I don't really want to come across that way, so I've got to tweak it a little bit more.
You've got to tweak that one, yes.
Yeah.
So I was teasing her before the show, how much is art and how much is craft?
Yeah, I don't even know if you can really tell how much is art and how much is craft. I mean, I feel like for me, a lot of what I do is just kind of play my guitar and sing out loud, and then kind of whatever comes to me. It doesn't even really feel like I do a lot of it.
I've had artists tell me that where the song, like, came through them.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I feel like.
Sometimes
I feel like
delivered
I grab it
in
out of the
one,
air.
In one package.
Mm-hmm. It's not usually in one nice little bowed-up package for me, but it does kind of feel like after it's done, I don't feel like I even wrote it.
Oh, you're touring where next?
Well, right now, I've got a couple of tours coming up. I have a few dates in Texas planned for this week. I'm playing in Austin tomorrow night on Tuesday, and then Dallas on Friday, and then back at the Bear Creek concerts in LaGrange, or Peace from the Porch concerts.
Mm-hmm. That's Saturday.
That's Saturday night. And then after that, I'm heading up to the Northwest and doing some dates up in Seattle and Portland and around that area. And then I head over to the East Coast. So I'm hitting a lot of ground this month.
Not to Chicago yet.
No, I'm kind of making a little stop through Chicago, but not doing any major shows there this month.
Is there any song that gets the most audience reaction from, you know, what you do, or does that vary so much?
It totally varies on who the audience is. I have a new song that you might have heard me play, Giving Up the Ghost, that is actually interesting because when I first started writing it, it was about a woman because, you know, it was kind of an autobiographical song, but I couldn't make the pronouns make sense. And so I had to switch it to being about a guy, so it makes me sound like I'm singing about a guy, which is interesting in and of itself. But the fact that a lot of people really like that song, I wonder if it's because it's like my most hetero sounding song.
Okay. I didn't want to necessarily lead you to do that song, but I would like to hear another song. And can you tell us just quickly about what you're going to play next?
Sure. Let's see. I'm actually... That one is a little dark for me right now. I think I'm going to go for something a little bit lighter. So this is actually the title track off of my second album.
Which is?
Fate Says He's Sorry.
Oh, I like that one. I noticed that from the set the other day. That stood out.
Thank you. Yeah, this is one of those songs that came from a friend of mine in college, basically telling me that she had feelings for me and they were not reciprocated, unfortunately, and I just felt really kind of guilty about it. And when I get guilty, I write songs. So this is kind of my apology to her.
Fate says he's sorry. His sister love has been experimenting on you. And about her visit the other night, said he would have been there too if he knew. So she says she's sorry. She just can't feel anything for you. And you wish you hadn't said a thing, but she said she already knew. You don't have to be. This family fate's in has made lots of mistakes, but fate is owning up to it this time. This might not have been meant to be, but I'd still like to apologize.
The name of that again was?
Fate Says He's Sorry.
From your second CD?
Yeah, my second album.
What was the first one called?
Self-Portrait Number 94.
Number 94, okay. Uh-huh. All right. Fine.
Okay.
Right. Number 94. What were 94? The other 93?
Yeah. Well, it was a concept. The idea being that, you know, we have a lot of different ways in which we express ourselves. There's not just kind of, you know, one self-portrait or one way of which we identify ourselves. And that was kind of my example at the time.
And you were so young then, too.
Yeah. I was so young and naive.
She's like, what, 24 now? What, 25?
24. Yeah, my rental car is costing me $1 million.
Okay. All right. We are very pleased to have brought you Julie Lloyd. You can find out more about Fate and Number 94 and all those good things on her albums at www.julieloyd.com. And Lloyd is L-O-Y-D. com. And we thank you for joining us, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Julie.
And
mm-hmm.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Greg Gordon for This Way Out, and I'm in the spacious and new studios of John McMullen and Sirius OutQ Satellite Radio. John, thanks for spending some time with us on This Way Out.
It's a pleasure.
Sirius coverage, basically United States or North America?
It's now because we have expanded it, and we have recently been licensed in Canada by the CRTC. We now have coverage of both the United States, the contiguous 48 United States, and Canada. We get into parts of Alaska, and we don't hit Hawaii because of where the satellites are. And it's amazing to have a technology that allows people to drive and hear the same crystal clear, you know, pop music station from Los Angeles to Kennebunkport, Maine. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you're on this long drive, and this is, I think, one of the reasons why some of the biggest early adopters of satellite radio were long-distance truck drivers, because they didn't have to lose the stations and constantly be futzing with the knob and all that to find a station that would come in clean and all that. Mm-hmm. And I've made a couple of drives myself across the country, and it's unbelievable. Here you have 150 radio stations. So that takes us to the next level, which is that satellite radio becomes kind of the super provider of all of this content, which is very highly segmented. And so they have all these various genres that they can break the music out into. There's 65 commercial-free music channels. All the music stations are 100% commercial-free. Then you move over to the talk side, and the talk and news and sports and special information, that can get broken up so many different ways. And then, of course, there's the so-called king of all media, Howard Stern, who programs two channels. He's been a real friend to the gay community with regards to this station. He has been a major asset. He has pushed so many listeners. Even before he came to Sirius, he would, you know, openly talk about the gay station. In fact, he'd have his band of weirdos who would call into the shows, the various talk shows on OutQ, and prank us, and thought that he was gonna flap us. And I think he was always so amazed at just how well we played right along with it.
Well, he seems to have a definite fascination with lesbians.
He does at that.
And of course, let's get to the focus of this conversation.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is OutQ.
That's right. And there's a gay station.
Yes, which you are the founder, creator, chief cook and bottle washer.
Sirius OutQ, which is a GLBT 24/7 station on the talk spectrum at Sirius, became the very first in-house developed full 24/7 talk station built and owned by Sirius. Now, they had other stations where it was a hodgepodge of content from different syndicators and programming providers, and some where it was mostly programming from some syndicators originally, and then they brought a couple of their own hosts in to kind of fill in the gaps there. But the very first station that they built 100% internally, homegrown, was Sirius OutQ. So it was a real strong message to send about their support for, you know, doing this kind of programming. And it's been very successful for them, obviously. The station has grown. We originally started with 15 original hours of talk a day, and then we reran some. We've added some music programming now late at night and on the weekends, so LGBT artists get a place to get national airplay. The lineup of the day is, we decided that people needed to wake up in the morning and know that not everything was wrong in the world today, to actually be able to laugh with a morning zoo type of show. Mm-hmm. And then to keep the mornings kind of light and fun and airy, we brought in Frank DeCaro, who does the Frank DeCaro Show middays. And Frank is on, you know, basically at the end of morning drive on the West Coast. But he's the kind of guy who's going to, you know, bring in a lot of arts and entertainment type of stuff. And he used to be on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, doing the movie reviews and things like that. So he co-hosts that show with Doria Biddle, who's actually out of Los Angeles, and so the show exists from both coasts, LA and New York.
Yeah.
It's bi-coastal. And then in the afternoons, the early afternoons, East Coast time, and midday West Coast time, Michelangelo Signorelli puts his firebrand of politics and and hot talk to work, and he's done some amazing stuff since he's been with us. We have a couple of rather naughty people who do a very provocative show that deals with sex and pop culture and stuff like that. It's called Derek and Romaine, and that's on for 4 hours in the evening. And then I come on from Los Angeles, and we've literally dubbed this show kind of the John McMullen Show is kind of the community center of the year. We try and bring people from all walks of life in. We built this lovely studio at the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center, and we welcome the world to come and visit when they're in L.A. It's at the Village at Egg Gould Plaza, and it's just been really super nice to actually have more programming that captures the ability to touch more people around the country. And as people come in and visit from different places, to have literally a soapbox here for people to jump up on, whether they're on the phone or they're in person. I love it. And then all night long, Jeremy Hovies plays LGBT artists on a show called Last Call.
Now, it's my understanding that you can get Sirius, OutQ, and all the other channels on Sirius, even if you don't have a receiver in your car.
Yeah, I mean, they make radios for home, for car, for, you know, home and car, and boombox. They make them for, on nightstands now. I mean, it's just about, and there's also portable players now that they have.
Is there anything that you would like people to know about Sirius OutQ that we haven't talked about?
Sure. We'd love to have This Way Out on the air there, and I'm trying to work a way to make that happen because we have a great deal of respect. You know, Greg, a lot of people come in here and they're like, oh, you're the founder of this one, you've done that, and you're like the granddad. I'm like, whoa, Greg Gordon, Lucia Chappelle, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, all those folks who have been working with Overnight Productions and This Way Out, they are the people who blazed this trail and made it possible for me and my colleagues here to actually have a shot at doing something. And so we're really grateful to you, and we want to do everything we can. And I just want to remind everybody who's within the sound of our voices right now that I hope that you'll write a check and that you'll support This Way Out, because this is a very important, valuable resource that reaches people well beyond my borders. For Sirius Satellite Radio, it reaches people everywhere around the world, and that's really important that we don't lose this asset to our community. Please, and they didn't ask me to do this. Greg is sitting across the table right now looking at me like he's going to tear up. This Way Out is a very important and valuable resource, and we're very pleased to be in great company with a lot of professional, dedicated queers who love bringing you this information.
Thank you, John. John McMullen, the station manager of Sirius OutQ, the queer channel on Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 106. Thanks very much for spending some time with us on This Way Out.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Deborah Bell, and unfortunately, Cheryl Swoops won't be able to join us this evening. She has to tuck in Jordan, and she's busy getting ready for the opening of her new club, Swoops 22 Sports Bar and Nightclub. If you want the details about that, then just look up the HoustonVoice.com online, and you'll see the article giving you the information about the opening of the new club and all the things going on this week, things you can come out and participate in. Of note will be a performance by comedian Karen Williams, and then on Thursday night they're having a meet and greet with Cheryl at the club, which is on Leland Street at St. Emmanuel. But instead we have two other lovely women.
Thank you.
One of them being our friend Liz McLean, who has visited with us on behalf of sisters many times, and Lois Meyer, who is with Uncommon Legacy. And they're going to tell us about the Progressive Dinner, which I'm so hungry right now, I could go on a Progressive Dinner.
Could you? Better
yes,
than a Regressive Dinner.
Yes, yes, I could. Yes. I could just start progressing right now and just, the rest of the evening. Tell me, what's all this about? Which one wants to start? Lois, you want to jump right in?
Sure, I'll start. Well, you're going to have to wait a few days if you're that hungry. The Progressive Dinner this year is going to be held on May 6th at 6 p.m. And the Progressive Dinner is just kind of a cool event. We meet at the Emmanuel, the Congregation Emmanuel, which is on Sunset, and there's a parking lot there, and we board buses, really nice buses, air conditioned, and there's a
yes, a real bus.
Anyway, and there's a host for each of the buses, and Carol Wyatt will be one, and I think Nancy Ford
is another. Yes,
right, and so you know that's going to be entertaining on the buses, and each bus goes to a different location, and they have four different stops. And there are hosts at each of the locations, and the first stop will be kind of hors d'oeuvres and wine and cheese and fruit and things, and then we go on to a salad course,
right.
And then to the main dish.
Right, and then dessert.
And then both buses meet up at one place, mm-hmm. and there'll be 100-plus people there, and we'll have dessert all together.
Okay, now, you go from place to place. Where are these places you're going?
Gorgeous homes.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're going to homes.
We're going to homes.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful people in our community have opened up their houses, and along with providing food, they're providing hospitality during this evening. And that's one of the reasons that it's so progressive.
Well, but the best thing about it is that you get to go through their houses and look at things, and it is absolutely gorgeous. Some of the people are
staff.
You get
to see the staff.
Yeah. That's some of the best things because
I can't believe they're so tacky.
They're lovely artwork.
No, they're not going to my house.
Or mine. So, yeah, we're all safe for that.
So where are these homes mostly? In a certain area?
Well, there are several in the Montrose. I think one is in River Oaks and the rest are in the Heights. So there's kind of a variety, and there's tour that we're going on, and anyway, it's just a lot of fun.
Do people know the menu in advance?
No, that's the fun part. No. And I think each place is responsible for it, and the food is always wonderful.
Yes.
So that's definitely a nice variety, and it's just a nice time to meet other people in the community and to get together and have a great time.
But they're going to jazz it up a little bit this year, too. I understand that the bus captains are going to maybe throw a few parties, all kinds of things on the buses, so it's going to be even more eventful.
Party on the bus.
Party off the bus. Yeah, exactly.
And eat a lot of good food and see a lot of beautiful houses.
It sounds like high school.
I think I did this for my senior trip.
Stay out of the back.
I
remember the back of the bus.
There is a back to both of these buses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is the most popular.
Okay.
And so... Assisters,
yes.
Tell me what assisters is.
Okay.
And let's make sure that we explain to people that the word is assist and hers.
Yes, slammed together. Assisters.
Yes, a very clever yes. little play
yes.
on words.
Play on words.
But
yes.
what is Assisters?
Assisters is an organization that was created actually 10 years ago. This is our 10th anniversary this year. You'll see us floating down the line of life with Jack and the others during Pride Parade. We are a nonprofit organization with a mission to create a community of caregivers. Basically, what that means in English is we have over 100 volunteers who assist women in our community, about 32 of them, last count, who have illnesses, chronic illnesses, debilitating circumstances. We do everything possible. We shop for their groceries, we're companions to them, we help them with their pets, we keep their yards, we move items for them. We give them the assistance in that sense that the government cannot, will not give them. We also educate people in our community about important health issues. On our second Saturday on May 13th, we'll have Lucia's Garden, coming over and talking about meditation and the importance of relaxation. And we have a real emphasis on lesbian health issues. And we just try to work to break down health and social service systems and make them more accessible to our public.
And that's an important thing to remember, that Assisters is a organization that exists to care for lesbians.
Exactly.
Because that was a underserved segment of the community. Now, lots of people can go to other organizations and get services, but we're where the service is for the lesbian.
Right, and Bering Support System was a very good role model for us with the AIDS issue and whatnot, and it's been good for our community to have a secondary group like the Sisters to come through specifically.
Mm-hmm. And I think Lucia would agree that partying is good for your health. And so that's another reason for the progressive dinner, I would say.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you like
partying.
That segue?
Yeah. You did that segue very well.
Very nice.
Well, good.
And then here's another segue. If you have to run it all off after that, on Saturday, June 10th, we have a 5K run.
Excellent.
Hey, there you go.
See there?
It works segues. Lovely. And I've known Lucia for a long time, and believe me, she would approve. Anything that brings joy to life.
Yes.
Yes, lady. And food.
Yes, and
yes.
Food. Oh, I tell you, this is
good
Italian
that.
Cooking. Mm.
Absolutely.
And so, Lois, with Uncommon Legacy, that's yet another community organization that
right.
also serves women. And tell us about it.
Well, Uncommon Legacy is a nonprofit organization, and it's actually Uncommon Legacy Houston now. We're Houston-based. And our main focus is working with lesbians in the community that need scholarship help to go to college. And this can be for achieving their undergraduate or their graduate degree. We have given scholarships to those getting their law degree, finishing up school, some of them just starting. And so, in fact, we are still accepting applications for scholarships this year. We're accepting applications up through mid-June, June 15th. And so you can go to uncommonlegacy.org and get information on that. But we're going to be giving out scholarships, $2,500 scholarships, to lesbians in Houston. And what we do is look at not only scholastically and economically whether they need the help and how well they're doing in school and what they're working towards, but also their community service, because what we're trying to do is to build up our community
right.
by helping to educate the young people and to help bring more people into the community to work for the betterment of the community.
Mm-hmm. And what is your role with Uncommon Legacy? Do you have a title?
Chief bottle washer.
We are not that formalized at the moment, and so I'm just the spokesman here this evening.
You're supposed to make up a title, like, you know, being
I have executive vice president.
Oh, I see. I'm chief poncho.
Okay.
There you go. Yes.
Honcha. That's good.
Honcha. Yes.
Mucha honcha.
Mucha honcha.
There you go.
Yes.
El grande honcha.
Later today on Bilingual.
Uncommon Legacy people are going, what?
They're
going,
they're really sorry that they sent me over here tonight.
And where do you raise your funds?
And we have a couple different things we do. One of them is the Progressive Dinner. We have always had a brunch every year, also where we have given out awards for uncommon people in our community, as well as had guest speakers. This year, I think we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're kind of working with a plan on doing a jazz brunch, maybe August, September, something like that. And so we're looking at some different venues for that. And so do something a little bit different, and then we'll be awarding the scholarships at that time, too. So we'll be kind of combining things. But we're going to kind of change things up, do a couple different events, and that's one of them. We've put on some golf tournaments before, and we may be looking at that as well. So,
mm-hmm.
But our next event coming up, the Progressive Dinner, and we just really encourage people to look that up. And
we've got a few tickets left.
And now the Progressive Dinner is when again?
This Saturday.
Okay.
Coming up at 6 o'clock. And you can go to our website, assisters.org. But yeah, post Cinco de Mayo. www.assisters.org. And a few tickets left. And if you want more information, you can contact us at 713-569-4964 and speak with Eva Gear, or Sisters directly, 713-521-4628. And once we get all those folks with scholarships, we're going to remind them that they can come in for decadent dessert in October on those breaks when they're studying.
On Saturday, when does
this
start? What time?
A lot related to food. Have you noticed?
There's a theme here. You can't beat it, though.
Lesbians and food.
Well, we get to our softball thing in spring, so they can work it off and then do the golf.
That's good.
Right. The Progressive Dinner starts at 6.
Thank you.
So it's an evening, and then going.
The sun's still up, everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
And Lois, again, how do people get in touch with Uncommon Legacy?
UncommonLegacyHouston.org. and that will give you the scholarship application is on there, and we have just extended the time frame for putting in scholarships, so it may say May 1st, but it really is going to be June 15th, and so we'll be accepting applications, then we'll be interviewing people and deciding on that.
And when will you be accepting nominations for the Uncommon Women Award?
We accept those right now. We're definitely accepting that. And so anyone that has someone that they feel has done a lot of good things for the community, we're definitely accepting.
And the women's community in particular.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are other organizations out there that do give scholarships, like Hatch gives scholarships and a couple other
and
organizations.
Gender Unity Commission.
After all, don't forget us volunteers.
That's good.
Sure. And they give scholarships to both men and women, but we particularly focus on the lesbians in the community.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth McLean and Lois Meyer, for being with us here on Queer Voices.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Birds up in the tree.
we were just kibitzing in the studio how much we love Farron's version of My Girl. That's from her album Inside Out. It came out, maybe 5 years ago. And you'll hear me talk to Farron about that on my May Queer Music Heritage, the last Monday of this month.
This is Queer Voices.
If your heart always did what a normal heart should do, if you always play a part instead of you,
veteran indie actor and queer idol Craig Chester makes the leap to director's chair for the new film Adam and Steve, a romantic comedy about two gay men whose relationship blooms in the face of overwhelming odds. Chester brought preview clips and sat down with This Way Out's Steve Pride to talk about the film and about being openly gay in Hollywood.
Craig Chester surfed the early 90s wave of the new queer cinema, starring in such breakthrough indie films as Swoon, Grief, and Frisk. He's the author of Why the Long Face, The Adventures of a Truly Independent Actor. And he's the writer, director, and star of the new gay romantic comedy, Adam and Steve.
Somebody needs a drink?
No, I'm straight. Sober.
Really? Wow. I'd hate to be sober. That sucks. I don't see why sober people still get to smoke. Nicotine is such a drug.
Yeah, but nicotine doesn't make me wander through gay bars pinching my nipples and moaning, pick me to hot guys.
Adam and Steve is about these two guys who meet in 1987 when they're 21.
Writer, director, actor, and author Craig Chester.
And they have this sort of disastrous one-night stand. And they meet again later, 17 years later now, but they don't recognize each other because they've sort of reinvented themselves. So the movie's sort of this suspense comedy, basically, where we're waiting for Adam and Steve to figure out that they met before in the 80s. And when they do find that out, the movie's really about how do they incorporate that into their current understanding of the relationship. That's the plot, but really that's just an excuse for a lot of over-the-top, retarded set pieces.
Adam and Steve also stars Craig's best friend Parker Posey, Saturday Night Live's Chris Kattan, and Broadway's Malcolm Getz, best known for his co-starring role on the TV show Caroline in the City.
I'm going to ask Adam to marry me.
Oh my God!
Marry him? But you guys have only been going out for like a couple months.
Actually, it's almost been a year, Michael. Besides, my parents got married on the third date, and they're still together.
Well, you're only as monogamous as your options. I mean, your parents live in a trailer park.
Excuse
in a field.
Excuse me? Only as monogamous as their options?
You know, it gets worse, Michael. I'm going to ask him to move in.
Oh, my God!
While acknowledging the film is first and foremost a romantic comedy, Craig asserts the characters of Adam and Steve are revolutionary in their own way.
You know, we're so inundated with images of perfection of 25-year-olds and Speedos, and a lot of gay men watch this film and have come up to me. It's like, I think they've never seen these images before in a way, and because we're showing these two 40-year-old guys, basically, who are trying to have a relationship, and it's not self-consciously political, but, you know, I've been all over the country doing Q&As with the film, and when I stand on the stage, I look out into the audience, and 99% of the people in the theater do not look like underwear models.
The recent spate of gay-themed films means a certain question has been asked of half the straight actors in Hollywood. I didn't want Craig Chester to feel he was left out just because he was gay, so I had to ask. Was it difficult kissing a man?
Yeah, Malcolm and I are both openly gay actors, and we're playing two gay guys in a relationship. We kind of did our research, and that's never really happened before. And it's sort of sad to me in a way that we're this far along into the gay film movement that we've never had a gay love story with two openly gay actors playing boyfriends. And I've done a lot of movies where I had to do love scenes with a straight actor playing gay, and it's not fun. And since I was directing the movie, I didn't really want to have to deal with that. I wanted to have an actor who could bring his life experience to the role. It was a romantic comedy. So Malcolm and I sat around. We talked about boyfriends we've had. We put stuff in the script of moments that we'd had in real life as gay men. And I think that the movie's very authentic that way. And the thing that people have commented on about the film and about our relationship on screen is that there's all this kissing in the movie that's not like a big deal. It's sort of the everydayness of that relationship that I think is very unique, and we haven't really seen much of that before.
According to Craig Chester, since the film's completion, there has been one big surprise.
Man, it was hard to get the gay press behind us. The thing is that you're never a hero at home. Everyone is still way more interested in a straight actor playing gay than two out actors playing gay. I guess Malcolm and I thought we would be more sort of celebrated for that. I think the gay community and the gay media is way more interested in mainstream acceptance and in Hollywood approval. And, you know, and even like the GLAAD Awards, Charlize Theron and, you know, liking us and giving awards to straight people. And I think that if the gay community was more supportive of their own, I would be like, everybody come out of the closet. But it's so hard because you don't really get a lot of support from mainstream Hollywood. And also from the gay press and the gay community, you really have to beg for whatever scraps you're given. And when I started out, you know, it wasn't that way. And now it's really like everyone is so obsessed with getting the approval of mainstream Hollywood. And I really don't think that until I make a film in the Hollywood studio system that I'll actually get on the cover of The Advocate.
When his first film, Swoon, was released in 1992, the list of out gay actors read Craig Chester. While he doesn't regret being out, he doesn't believe the choice is any easier in today's Hollywood.
You know, for me, it was always like, I've always been out, and my first film, Swoon, was, you know, I was 25, and the first wave of queer cinema really came out of AIDS activism. Like, all those films were fueled by that kind of rage and those politics, because a lot of those filmmakers were involved in ACT UP and Queer Nation, and I was also, and so whenever I started working in films, it didn't make sense to me, coming from this sort of AIDS activist background, that I should suddenly, you know, start dating a girl and pretending like I'm straight. And that's really why I'm out, because it was completely tied into that time and place. But, you know, I think it's actually a little bit worse now for an openly gay actor. I think back then there was some hope, you know, that maybe we could really come out, you know, and it would work. And then it sort of happened a little bit with Ellen, and then no one else came out, and I think it sort of feels like this moment that passed in a way.
This has been a conversation with writer, director, actor, and author Craig Chester. Adam and Steve is from TLA Releasing and Funny Boy Films. More info can be found at adamandstevemovie.com, craigchester.com, and as always, prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Kathy Sanchez, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Stephen Hunt, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Michael Callen sang Love Don't Need a Reason, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit thiswayout.org to see some good and not so good news about This Way Out and how you can help us stay on the air, and choose from some unique LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com.
com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Radio Veronica, West Point, Pennsylvania, WBCR, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And we'd like to thank our guests tonight, which we had a lot of guests tonight.
Yes, we had Lois Meyer and Elizabeth McLean from Uncommon Legacy and a Sisters talking about the Progressive Dinner coming up this Saturday night.
Julie Lloyd came in and gave us a little mini concert that you can check her out at www.julieloyd.com, LOYD.com.
And Sally Huffer from the Montrose Counseling Center.
And also David Elliott called in from Washington to talk about some national issues, and actually was pretty interesting. He was talking about...
That was a little different for him, kind of like a segment almost. I thought, are we listening to This Way Out?
It was funny.
And he talked about something that I didn't know about until like an hour or two before, how Stephen Colbert just sort of...
Took over off. That.
Yes.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Well, the month of May ahead of us is providing us with lots of opportunities for interesting shows because we have to work them around our spring fund drive. And if we want to avoid having to raise funds on air, people can pledge online, and that will save all that work.
Pledge in advance.
That's right. And we're also going to do something a little different, which is instead of the fourth Monday of the month, we will have Queer Music Heritage on the fifth Monday. So
I'm totally confused.
Join the club.
It'll be fine.
But just like tonight, we got through yet another program of Queer Voices, and so we hope that everyone will join us again next week.
Also a very interesting weekend because there was a number of events going on, including the Kindred Spirits reunion.
The HRC Gala, Peace from the Porch down at the International Festival, and I missed everything because I was sick.
Well, that'll teach you.
I'm so poor sorry scheduling, Deborah. Poor scheduling.
No, I should plan to be sick when nothing's happening.
You do
happening.
Such a good job in scheduling the show.
I wore myself out.
So that's and also remind our listeners that After Hours has moved back to Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning. So that's happening. There's been some schedule changes at KPFT, including us being moved back an hour on Monday nights from 8 to 10
We're on from 8 to 10 after Interchange that's on at 7, and then Queer Voices, but then following us is World Cafe.
Yes. Yes. If you can keep that all straight.
I don't keep anything straight.
I know.
And if you should miss us, you can go to the archives at kpfd.org and go to archives, and you can listen to us anytime you want to.
Oh, one last note. We're going to have a very interesting speaker at the caucus meeting this Wednesday.
Yes, Stephen Kleinberg.
It's going to be rather interesting because he's going to be talking about some of the surveys he does and how GLBT people fit into the metropolitan area. It sounds really exciting. In fact, if you'd like some, it's not up on the website. It should be.
But our very own Jennifer Poole, the new president of the caucus.
Yay, Jennifer.
Her first official meeting as president. We want to congratulate you, Jennifer.
And the meeting is this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Community Center, which is at 3400 Montrose, Suite 209.
He's playing Margie Adam in the background, so that means we're getting ready to end another week of...
Well, good night.
Time to shuffle on out of here.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday night at midnight for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Would you like to hear more of your favorite KPFT programs and less fundraising? Well, you can, but it's up to you to make it happen. KPFT's next on-air membership begins May 8th. With your pre-pledge gift, you help shorten the on-air drive by 1 hour, 1 day, or even more, so we can get you back to the KPFT programming you enjoy. We can shorten the on-air drive by 1 day for every $20,000 we receive. We'll remove fundraising days and hours as quickly as you and other KPFT listeners buy them back. That's our pledge to you. So, send your gift today or make a secure contribution online at kpft.org before the on-air drive begins on May 8th. Remember, every gift makes a difference in getting back to KPFT's regular programming sooner. Thank you for your continued and generous support of KPFT Houston.
On Thursday, April 13th at 7 p.m., Voices Breaking Boundaries presents acclaimed activist and radio producer David Barsamian for its 0506 cultural narrative series in a talk entitled Another World is Possible, People Power in the Age of Empire. There will be food, music, and exciting conversation. All this on Thursday, April 13th, 7 p.m. at the Houston Artery.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.